Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. It is Friday, October 10th, and this is a day that already is marking the 1 month anniversary of the horrific assassination of Charlie Kirk. And I can't believe it has already been a month, and so much has happened since then. We've seen a lot of revival in this nation. We've also seen, frustratingly, I think, some division among those on the right of, you know, how exactly to carry on Charlie's legacy. But ultimately, we need to remember that this comes down to not what would Charlie do, but what would Jesus do? Because he was always the first person to turn back to the things of Christ and speaking the truth of the gospel of Christ. So we're going to get more into that and more into the news of the day. But first, I want to thank everyone who over the last 3 days has participated in our biannual, or I guess twice annual, Share-a-thon, and I'm making this one of the best Share-a-thons ever. And so if you missed donating during the live programming over the last 3 days, you can still do that to support our ministry here at American Family Radio Network. You can go to afr.net and still give your best gift there. And I'm so grateful for all of you who keep us on the air, because I love each and every morning being able to sit here and talk about the things of truth together. And this is really exercising our first freedoms in the First Amendment of the liberties or freedom of speech, freedom of a free exercise of religion, and also freedom of the press. And so this is what we're doing together, which is speaking together about truth and the things of God. And there is nothing that can or should prevent that, at least from state interference. And we sometimes self-censor, which we shouldn't, even though the state and the government may not censor us. If we are self-censoring out of fear of backlash or the names or the hatred or whatever, and we're self-censoring, then we're not doing the work of Christ and the things of God and of truth. So thank you again for being so generous over the last 3 days. And again, you can go to afr.net if you still would like to give and you are one of those procrastinators who goes, well, wait a minute, I meant to over the last 3 days, but I didn't. There is still time. There's always time to do that. But the big news and the headline that was actually 2 evenings ago was President Trump announced a breakthrough on the Israel-Hamas deal on Monday evening. He said, "I am proud to announce that Israel and Hamas have both signed off on the first phase of our peace plan. This means that all of the hostages will be released very soon, and Israel will withdraw their troops to an agreed-upon line as the first steps toward a strong, durable, and everlasting peace. All parties will be treated fairly. This is a great day for the Arab and Muslim world, Israel, all surrounding nations, and the United States of America, and we thank the mediators from Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey who worked with us to make this historic and unprecedented event happen. Blessed are the peacemakers," and signs off Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. I love how proud he is of that title. Like, it just reminds me how much he really loves America. And so for more on this, let's welcome in our fantastic guest this morning, who I was actually with along with Alex McFarland, our great Exploring the Word with Alex McFarland Ministries. Last weekend in South Carolina, we did kind of a roundtable, actually honoring Charlie Kirk and continuing to talk and discuss about the things of truth. So I'm, of course, speaking about former Congressman Mark Walker, who is President Trump's nominee for Ambassador for International Religious Freedom. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining me this morning. You can follow him on X at Rep Mark Walker. I'd encourage you to do that. And first of all, you know, what are your thoughts overall on this peace plan and the strategy? Hopefully the hostages will be released as soon as Monday.
Well, first of all, Jenna, thank you. It's an honor, honor to be with you. We have followed you for a long time. Appreciate all your work and devotion to our country and ultimately to the cause of Christ. I think you would have to describe this as a historic occasion. You know, being the former ranking member on our Homeland Security Subcommittee of Intelligence and Counterterrorism, you've watched some of the videos and you've seen some of the behavior, the barbarism, the slaughter of some of the Jewish folks. And to see where we were 2 years ago to where we are now with President Trump's leadership, I think it's a day to celebrate. At the same time, I think it's to ever be vigilant and watchful of the evil that we are facing, that we see specifically a lot with the extremism, whether it's the various countries. But as far as this specific time and place, I think it's going to be marked. I can't imagine if the administration was Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, that would be overwhelmingly partisan. But I applaud President Trump. I applaud certainly Benjamin Netanyahu in this situation to be able to make sure that those hostages come home. I can't imagine, Jenna, being one of the families to this day not knowing or that son or daughter may even be alive, or what the expectations are. But I do think it's a day, and I am grateful for President Trump and how much he loves America and how much he's put in his attention to peace.
Yes, I fully agree with that. I mean, this is a president who has wanted to approach the table diplomatically and with diplomatic solutions instead of starting wars or continuing hostilities. And obviously, you know, he's had consequences for countries that he deems deserve it. You know, we've seen some of the tariffs that began his administration and some of those kind of economic sorts of consequences. But ultimately, it was really to strong broker deals that have been truly historic. And I think that his view on this really is overall the best for our nation and certainly is the best for the families of the hostages that you mentioned. And likewise, I can't imagine having a family member or a loved one in captivity like this for 2 years. I mean, just incredibly, incredibly tragic. And, you know, some of the concern overall about this deal is whether or not, you know, Hamas is going to be faithful to uphold their end of the bargain. And I guess we'll see pretty immediately with the hostages and return. But are there any other concerns that you're seeing with this type of agreement in terms of how Israel is coming to the table and agreeing to this? Really, I mean, overall, if I don't trust anyone in this situation, it's going to be the leaders of Hamas.
But there's no question, Jenna, your instincts are spot on for a historical reason. When you teach your children from the time that they can walk or talk to pick up some kind of instrument or weapon and talk about the crowning day of being able to kill a Jew as the little Satan or America as the great Satan, that is a generational issue. And that is where strength and force or the ability to go there is necessary to consummate such deals. And look, there's no part of any negotiation like this that everybody walks away with completely happy. I don't like the fact that we're releasing more than 1,000 of the prisoners that Israel has captured that are associated with Hamas. But nevertheless, for these families, I'm sure It's a mixed emotion day. And for the peace agreement, you know, I applaud Secretary Rubio and Jared Kushner and some of the others that were involved, Steve Witkoff, for being diligent. And President Trump, again, you know, I think the world knows that when he comes to the table, he means business, and that you have to at some point look back and say this is the sixth or seventh major situation where he has brokered some kind of agreement, whether it's the DRC and in Rwanda, whether it's India and Pakistan or other places, and I think that's going to mark his first year. And I believe and hope that he will get favorable remarks, even from the leftist media. At some point, you have to acknowledge this has been a historic year when it comes to brokering these kinds of agreements.
Yeah, well, Hillary Clinton said that if, you know, this happened, that she would nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize. So I'm waiting on that announcement from Hillary Clinton's X feed, you know. So if the Democrats don't go along with their double standard, then, you know, it looks like they're going to have to nominate him. But I'm speaking with former Congressman Mark Walker, who is President Trump's nominee for Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. And you can follow him at Rep. Mark Walker on X. I'd encourage you to do that. And speaking of, you know, peace and how the Trump administration, even from the first term and now moving into coming up very shortly, the second year of his second term, the focus on peace and international religious freedom, I think has been truly remarkable, especially for an administration that, you know, very much in the beginning, a lot of sincere Bible-believing Christians were rightly, I think, very concerned how President Trump would approach these issues, would approach things like pro-life, would approach family issues, you know, things that we have for decades and decades prior to Trump running for office initially have advocated for very sincerely. And we didn't want to see kind of a move backward from a Republican nominee. And I have to say, I mean, overall, and of course, you know, we can critique and criticize, and we should, you know, where that's relevant and necessary. Overall, President Trump has really exceeded expectations, I think, of Christian voters in his first term, and now into his second, a lot more than a lot of us were concerned with, especially with, you know, some of the ways that the Republican Party were treating issues like pro-life, traditional marriage, you know, those kinds of things heading into the election. So you are in addition to being a former Congress member, you are also a pastor, you're a sincere Christian. And as President Trump's nominee for Ambassador for International Religious Freedom, this is an important position. And what does this mean overall as a representative of the Trump administration? And what are you looking to do with this position?
Thank you, Jenna. I will just a little quick history. This is written into law. It was led by a Republican House member who first put the law together and also had the help of Senator Dan Nichols, but was signed into law begrudgingly by Bill Clinton in 1998, that lays out this position as the principal advisor to, in this case, Secretary Rubio and President Trump on international religious freedom. We're really seeing evil raise its head from a persecution standpoint. It's almost like it has spiked in the last year or so, whether it's Prime Minister India Modi, who has really raised the blasphemy laws. We're seeing it in Syria. We're seeing it in other places in Africa. Even South Korea recently in the last year has really created some hardships for believers. And so part of our job, or I guess the primary thrust of our job, is to go in and meet with these leaders and engage, expose, and where we can eradicate by different measures under the law that we have to protect, whether it's our own missionaries or whether it's people of faith. Some of the most brutal things that I have witnessed is some of the Islamists coming into the countries of Africa and just slaughtering individuals simply because of the Christian faith. Maybe some of your listeners are familiar with some of the things that are going on in Nigeria, which is the number one in the world where Christians are continuing being killed, tens of thousands over the last few years. So my job is to deep dive there and making sure that we are working with the administration, working with the secretary, working with the president to do what we can to suppress and where we can eradicate. It's two different. I'll try to stay out of the weeds, but real quickly, in a lot of your Middle East or Asian countries, a lot of it is where you have blasphemy or anti-conversion laws. So if you're simply sharing your faith or talking about Jesus on the street or to a neighbor, you can be in prison 5, 7, 10, maybe 15 years, just destroying your family and your property, and those prisons are pretty rough places. In other countries, many in the African countries, to proclaim the name of Christ, as well as North Korea and China, it could be death. Literally, it could be a death sentence just because you're unwilling to back off your faith. So there are 19 countries that I'm focused on right now that are really seeing a spike in the religious persecution, and it's people from all faiths. This is the job, whether it's the Druze in Syria, 750,000 Druze are being starved and out there by the Syrian, the new Syrian regime. So all these different places, we want to be a voice and an advocate for this administration to make sure that we continue not only this path of peace, but to reduce the harmful targeting, persecution, and these atrocities against people of faith.
I'm just going to call you Ambassador because I have faith that you'll be confirmed as soon as the government reopens. I know that that's holding up your confirmation proceeding, Mark
right.
Walker. But, you know, this is so important that people understand that there are countries right now that don't have the same freedoms and liberties recognized by their governments as we do here in the United States. And it's incredible. I mean, when you look at Charlie Kirk's memorial and how so many of our own cabinet members just got up and proclaimed the truth of the gospel of Christ. I mean, that is such an incredible testament to the nation of the United States of America. And other countries need to model that and emulate that so that we can have this free exchange of ideas, so that we can speak truth without fear of persecution and prosecution. And so, you know, as you look toward these countries, there is an understanding among, you know, some Christians that there's a little bit of a clash between what religious freedom means versus what the Christian worldview requires. How do you reconcile that in terms of promoting the gospel of Christ as a Christian, but recognizing that religious freedom means that, you know, anybody can talk about their faith, even if they have a faith in what we would describe as a false religion, which is anything else?
Sure. No, as a former pastor, yes, that's a great question for me to process as I go out there and personally live my life, hopefully that honors and reflects my Christian faith. You did touch on it briefly as far as all the things that were shared by cabinet members. In fact, last week I was with Secretary Rubio, and I told him how much the last 80-something seconds of his speech, how he just laid out the gospel and how among Christians and evangelicals, what that meant, that he was very sound in sharing the gospel. This was not something, as I told him, that he just discovered in the last few weeks. This is, having known the secretary for 10, 11 years, this is how he lives his life. So to the heart of your question, yeah, I think when you're working for administration, your job is to try to promote liberty and freedom in any place, in any country. But at the same time, I'm not going to ignore the fact that Christians are the number one persecuted people group in the entire world. And there's no place in the world where Christians are doing any persecution on other religious minorities or what have it. They are the recipient, number one target of the group. But we also know that over 80% of this comes from radical Islamists. A lot of it's in Africa, but other places. At the same time, as I mentioned earlier, If you take a religious minority group like the Druze, D-R-U-Z-E, I want to be an advocate where there's religious oppression there, where folks are their livelihood, not just their lifestyle, but literally their well-being is at play. America's always been that beacon of hope. In fact, I was recently in London when one of Margaret Thatcher's I guess she was a director of comms or director of a women's group there. She's in her 80s. Her first name was Emma. And she said, Congressman, America is the last beacon of hope for religious freedom. And she said, you're the only country where it's literally written in your law. And if America doesn't speak out for the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion, no one else will. And I feel the weight of that responsibility and feel very honored to be able to work in this particular area.
And I love the fact that such a sincere Christian, and with your pastoral background and also your background in Congress, I think you are the perfect fit for this role. Mark Walker, and listeners can follow him at Rep. Mark Walker on X. I'd encourage you to be praying for his confirmation hearing, and that would be quickly expedited as soon as the government reopens. The sombrero memes will continue until morale improves, I'm told, on this Schumer shutdown and all of the things that the Democrats are trying to push. But you know, we have business to do as a government, and this is one of them. But we're going to take a break here and then come back with more with former congressman and current nominee for ambassador to international religious freedom, Mark Walker, because I want to talk about the state of religious freedom in America and how we move that forward here in the home front and abroad, but especially here in the United States. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and I am here with my special guest, a former congressman and nominee for Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Mark Walker, and we're talking about religious freedom in the context that America truly is the shining city on the hill that recognizes religious freedom and the right to freely exchange ideas, the opportunity to question the reality to which we are presented, the opportunity to question who are we as human beings, anthropology, where we are going in eternity, the end of all things, eschatology, all of these questions about is there a God and is there a creator? And when we discover through self-evident truth that there is a God, who is he and what has he revealed to us about himself? All of these questions we should be able to freely ask, and we should be able to freely answer in a society that is committed to finding truth. Because when we have censorship in any country, or persecution against any questioning or debates or even belief systems, then we actually have a difficulty to find truth, because truth is discoverable, it's self-evident, as our founders recognized, but we have to be able to ask those questions freely and also answer them freely. And so, Mark Walker, the question then becomes, if we as a civil society and as a government are saying, you know, we do not punish or censor, you know, any belief system, in terms of those questions and answers, then how is it that we are still founded on a Judeo-Christian worldview and we can still advocate for law and policy that is from distinctly a Christian perspective? And how do you reconcile that question with religious freedom?
Well, I think you go back and you be a student of our history. I know there are some influencers even now raising loud voices that are condemning Judeo-Christian principles. But, you know, as I walk through, even being here in D.C. as we speak, and I see the scripture verses that are etched in marble, I see the quotes by our first Supreme Court Justice, John Jay, who talked about the ideal of being a Christian nation, whether it was John Adams. I mean, you can go on and on as far as even though some try, you just can't push back to say that was not our founding. And despite recently Senator Tim Kaine mocking the fact that our rights come from God, we know that they do. And if that is the case, then we can have a certain level of confidence and speak boldness that we can protect those rights. You know, I think sometimes, and I've talked with pastors, sometimes there's a little bit of a meekness or a lack of courage to get out there and speak boldly when we encounter the enemy or when we encounter the left, whether they're radical or not, that wants to infringe on our ability to proclaim, whether it's the gospel of Jesus Christ or just can raise our families or just build on these Judeo-Christian principles. And I think one of the things that we have lost in this country is the pulpit's ability or willingness to be able to get out there and speak boldly and pushing back, whether it's in our education arena, whether it's secondary education or whether it's on our university campuses. And to back that up, I'll give you one statistic I saw just this morning, where if you look at young people that are younger than 35 years old, I believe it is, their view of Israel and Palestine is completely different from those that are 40 years and older. They're much more favorable toward Palestine and the mindset that we see that's coming from the left. Those are the kinds of things that I think that we've got to speak more boldly here in our country, in America, to make sure that we have a generation, and I think we're seeing some improvement there recently, but having a generation that understands what those Judeo-Christian principles mean in our society here in America.
Yeah, that's so well said, Ambassador, because, you know, we need to understand, I think, that that having a public square where the government doesn't censor ideas and questions and discussion about truth does not at all mean that then government cannot create law and policy based on truth. And truth, of course, is grounded in the Christian worldview, which is the best explanation for the reality to which we're presented. And so there's no conflict there. And there definitely is not a conflict between being America first and also supporting the nation of Israel. And as you mentioned, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm seeing so many young people, especially in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death and the rise of a lot more young people that are engaging the conversation, which is, you know, a really positive outcome from such a horrendous tragedy, that more and more young people are, you know, standing up and getting to the microphone and are asking these questions and wanting to answer them. The church, I think, needs to do a better job at explaining that America first doesn't just mean America only. And this isn't just a rational policy perspective because Israel is our ally, which is true, but it's also a moral position because overall the West and America's founding would not have happened but for the Old Testament, the nation of Israel, and the truth of the gospel of Christ. I mean, we are built on everything that that ultimately is the nation of Israel. It doesn't mean that we have to agree with everything that the current regime or government of Israel says, just like we don't necessarily have to agree with everything that the American government does. I mean, there are still objective moral principles, but overall supporting the nation of Israel and supporting the West and Western civilization, that is ultimately incredibly important.
Yeah. Exactly. I'll give you one quick example. Just yesterday, I was there in the chambers there in Congress, of showing some guests around, since you can do that during the shutdown. So, as a former member, and above the gallery, your audience has probably seen where the State of the Union is President Trump, or the President is giving the State of the Union, and up in the gallery to his left is usually where the First Lady sits there. But above her head and around the entire chambers, there are these pictures of these great philosophers, whether they're ancient Greek, whether they're former American philosophers, all these great wise men throughout history that are all looking a different direction. But if you're standing down in the well or the dais right where President Trump gives a speech and you look straight up, there's only one person, one former historical individual that is looking straight at the speaker, straight at the president, and that is Moses, the giver of the law. Mm. And it reminds me, just as far as, again, our founding fathers who understood, as you talked about the Old Testament, the Judeo side, and the New Testament, from really laying out the gospel message of Jesus Christ and Jesus coming to earth and dying, being resurrected to fulfill the gospel there. It is unequivocal when you see the only one of these great historical characters that are looking straight at the speaker, or in the case when President Trump is there, and that is Moses from the Old Testament. It's just another reminder as far as the fundamental foundation of things that we have to stand and protect, because, yes, there are lots of places in the world, but evil is raising its head in our own country right now. And if they can steal the hearts and minds of a generation, I'm certainly a little older than you are, but the generation behind us, that's the long game. And that's what we've seen, whether it's socialism, whether it's communism, whether it's this new mask of Mamdani democratic socialism, which is just socialism. That's the battle that we have right now, because that is an anti-God philosophy that we must really root out from the very pits of where it comes from.
And I'm speaking with Mark Walker, who is President Trump's nominee for Ambassador for International Religious Freedom. And Mark, what do you think is the primary reason that young people don't have the same commitment that the older generation does? I mean, I remember being, you know, raised in a church where we spoke openly about why we support Israel, about doctrine, about theology. And it seems like somehow that, you know, this next generation, they get the political side, but not really informed theology.
Well, you know, there's two reasons. One, we've had 50, 60 years in the public education arena where to even mention God was taboo. And, you know, there's a reason that 95-97% of educators are registered Democrats, and some even more extreme, really bringing in the leftist ideology, whether they're elementary, high school, or even on our university campuses. So there's an intentional indoctrination that took place, funded by the federal government, that if you wanted to get even the 10% of the federal funding, these were some of the mandates that you would have to implement. That's one. Part two of that is, and I want to drive this home in the short time that we have left, is the lack of, whether it's inability, willingness, or courage by the church to fulfill its role. Historically, if you look at our founding fathers, Roger Williams, William Bradford, these were men of God that filled the pulpits on Sunday but were very involved in the political arena. And if, even if you want to make the case, and I see this a lot in some of the younger pastors, that you know, politics isn't really something that we should discuss in church. Well, here's where you're, and I believe that you're missing on it. If you want to go back 50 years ago, where there was one nightly news program of 30 minutes, whether it was Walter Cronkite or whoever, I might could understand your point, because the biggest difference between Republicans and Democrats, we're talking about how much should be delivered versus, you know, from a money side, how much should be arbitrated one way or the other. But with the onslaught of the social issues and the attacks on the family and men and women's sports and the trans movement and all the other things that we've seen over the last few decades, the cheapening of life, the pastors, I believe, that was their moment to be able to engage. And my point is this: if your parishioners are being engaged with 9 or 10 24-hour news networks You're getting a constant stream in several different social media platforms. If you're not leading your people, if you're not educating your people from a biblical worldview, then who do you expect to lead them? Who do you expect to be able to counter the world's programming that's wanting to dumb down the very godly principles that we hold dear? And I think that's really where we've got to see a turn, and hoping, as we've said a few times, as you've eloquently mentioned, that Charlie Kirk, his passing is a wake-up call for ministers, and I've seen a few of those out there, willing to be able to engage and take on a liberalism and a radicalism that is our culture today.
So well said, and absolutely. It reminds me of Vodi Bakum, who is another great that we've just recently lost,
yes,
when he said very famously, you know, if you send your kids to Caesar, don't be surprised when they come back as Romans. And, you know, his point is, if we send our children to be educated by the world and indoctrinated by a non-Christian or any other worldview other than the truth of Christ, we shouldn't be surprised when then they come back thinking like the world. And we have to take a much better position than that. And parents need to be responsible and understand that God gives children to parents, not to the state or the government, for their upbringing in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And, you know, this is another great thing that President Trump is an advocate for school choice, for homeschooling. All of that is so great. But in just the last few minutes that we have here with you, Mark Walker, you know, all of this is so incredibly important. And it may seem a little bit overwhelming to the parent who's thinking, you know, there's so much in the current culture that we have to fight against. I mean, I have to monitor everything that my kids even watch on, you know, their cartoon programs that are promoting, you know, the LGBT agenda and all of these things.
Right. It's
so difficult in this day and age. How would you encourage, from maybe a pastoral perspective, parents, but then also the young people who are listening, to really engage with truth in this moment?
Well, you know, it makes me think, you know, maintaining liberty or freedom always comes with a cost. And as a parent, you have to ask yourself, is that battle worth it? And I hope the answer would be yes. There's no easy template when we're living in the culture we do today, where we are inundated on every hand, a progressive ideology that is both anti-Scripture and anti-God. But I want to encourage the folks that that we can claim the promises of Proverbs 22:6, even though training is hard sometimes. But when you're pouring in that and putting milk and honey before the children, God says when they're older they will not run from it. And I think of Proverbs 3:5, that when we trust in the Lord, He makes those paths straight. Now sometimes there are seasons where it's a little stormy. At the same time, to make those investments, because as a parent, there is no higher calling than to be able to pour into those children to make sure that they're able to stand all, as it says in Ephesians 6, all the wiles and the fiery darts of the enemy.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is where we have to continue to stand up boldly and courageously. So I'm speaking with Mark Walker, who is awaiting confirmation as President Trump's nominee for ambassador at large for international religious freedom. How can we pray for you and your family as you are awaiting confirmation? And then I have confidence you will step into this role.
Thank you, Jenna. We're trying to exercise biblical patience. There are sometimes days we're a little frustrated because we are getting people from all over the world that are reaching out to us, ready for us to engage. We want to engage. So just praying for, as you talked about earlier, an expeditious hearing that we can get up and going. We've got about 30 people in the State Department that oversee the vast global regions of international religious freedom. So number one is just praying for the process. And number two, and I don't usually like to say this, but you've asked me point blank, praying for protection, you know, going into places and some of the places where evil is unmasked in a different way, in a different level, and just praying for protection, both spiritually and physical, would be something that I'd be honored if your audience would remember us in.
Amen. And we will be. And I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to meet you personally and pray with you there in South Carolina this last weekend. And what a great event with our friend Alex McFarland. And so for everyone who's listening, and especially our AFR family, please do keep Mark Walker and his family in prayer. Pray for a swift confirmation. And yes, absolutely for protection. Unfortunately, you know, we're seeing such a rise of violence even here in America, and targeting of Christians, and you will be on the front lines, of course, in this role. So we are praying for that. And I'm so encouraged that you're the nominee in this position. And we will look forward to continuing the conversation as your confirmation hearing gets set. So, Mark Walker, thank you so much for joining this morning. I look forward to having you on again soon. Follow Mark Walker on X at Rep Mark Walker. And then you can message him and tell him how you are praying for him and his family, and provide that encouragement as well. So we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I want to take time again to just thank all of our listeners and our AFR family for participating in our share-a-thon, donating to this ministry to keep us on the air. You know, we talked at the opening of the program that today is the 1 month ago of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And in seeing the continued ripple effect of that absolute tragedy, both for good and mainly for good, but, you know, some obviously a loss of his incredible voice, you know, and some kind of infighting that I think is entirely unnecessary on for those on the right. It's just reminded me more and more how important it is that we continue the work here at American Family Radio Network, because unlike other networks that maybe speak from a conservative or a even, you know, Republican viewpoint, or, you know, they have talking points from various, you know, candidates, perspectives, all of that, we're not beholden to that here at AFR. And I love that, because as someone who regular listeners know, you know, I did represent President Trump and, you know, spoke on behalf of him. So, of course, was, you know, beholden to his viewpoint. And that's fine. That's what you do as a spokesperson. There is a lot of freedom in being able to represent Christ and be an advocate for just the things of truth, not any particular candidate or person in office, any particular party or partisan viewpoint. And there's a lot of responsibility in that as well. Because, you know, if I thought that it was a lot of weighty responsibility to speak on behalf of a current sitting president of the United States, how much more should we as Christians always recognize that we have such a profound responsibility, and we should take that very seriously when we are daily at every moment representing Christ in all that we do, especially to those who have not yet come into a saving knowledge of him. When those who are not saved, they don't embrace Jesus, know that we are Christians, then we need to take that very seriously, that they're looking at us, and do they want the life and the joy that we have. And it's not just that, you know, we're the ones who are, you know, rich in status and wealthy in property and all this other stuff. No, it's not about having the things and the material things of the world. It's about having joy and peace and truth and answers. And so we live that out constantly, and we can provide that hope. And, you know, as I've been reflecting on my friend, you know, Charlie Kirk, and the loss of his voice, and seeing so many of the reels that, you know, he just sat out there. I mean, he just engaged these college students, and, you know, and even professors and adults that would come and step up to the microphone to talk to him. And he didn't do it in an arrogant way. He wasn't wearing, you know, brand name labels. He wasn't, you know, sitting there taking, you know, all the pictures and posting them with all of the people that he interacted with for sake of saying, you know, look at me and look at my life. He just sat there, you know, honestly, as, you know, frankly, a young man, and I knew him kind of as a kid, right? And I can say that being in my 40s now, you know, anybody who's under 25 is a kid. But, you know, when I met him when he was much younger, he just had this hunger and this drive to understand truth and to speak it and to live it. And that really needs to be our drive consistently. And I love what Ambassador Mark Walker said in, you know, that drive to consistently promote the truth of the gospel of Christ, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters. I mean, and at the end of the day, meaning literally at the end of our lives or the lives of our friends, every person, every human being is made in the image of God, lives in reality, whether or not, you know, the leftists want to acknowledge reality, they still live in it. And the reality is that one day all of us will die and we will stand before our Creator and be accountable for what we did in this life. It's really an incredible thought, if you think about this, how fleeting and how short of a time we have in this present life, in this reality. Even if you live to be, you know, over 100, which is, you know, kind of a feat in today's modern era, if you live to be over 100, compared to eternity, that is not even a grain of sand. That is not even a vapor. That is not even a wisp of a moment. And yet, your entire eternity, my entire eternity, is determined and dependent on the choice that we make while we are living to accept and acknowledge the truth of reality that Jesus is Lord and accept his free gift of salvation, that when we stand before him, we will have to answer for our sin. We will have to answer for the sin that we committed here on earth. And we will not have an answer. Not all of the other things that we did good. If you spent every moment being as philanthropic and from being as wealthy as Elon or Jeff Bezos or, you know, Bill Gates or any of these people, even if you gave every dime that you had to charity, you did such good work, that will never be enough to say in that moment, meeting your Creator, I have done enough to overcome being fallen and the sin that we have all committed. There's nothing we can do. It is not enough. And so in that moment, the only thing that we will be able to say is, I claimed Christ and his blood, and I believed in his resurrection that he is Lord and that he gave his life to cover my sin. And he has paid the price that I could never pay. And that is my only hope and claim to spend eternity in a reconciled relationship with Christ. That's it. That's the only hope that we have, is to claim that Christ paid it all for us. Nothing we can do would ever repay what we have done. As good of a wonderful, you know, Mother Teresa as any of us could possibly be. And we know that because there's always someone else who has given more, has done more, and done more philanthropic, objective good than us. Even if we spent every waking moment in ministry, there's not enough that we could do. And this is why it's so important to disciple the next generation, because understanding, I mean, evangelism, of course, is key. We have to promote the truth of the gospel of Christ. But then when our friends and family and children and, you know, everyone we come in contact with, when they make that profession of faith, which is not just believing, it is choosing to recognize the reality that Christ is Lord. When they accept the free gift of salvation and Christ's propitiation is the theological term, to justify us for his gift to cover our sins. When we accept that, then we have an obligation and a responsibility to teach truth and the things of God to those around us. And so I would just encourage you to be like Charlie in this sense. And I have taken this very seriously in my life as well. So, I mean, I'm preaching to myself as well, always. But to take very seriously having a spiritual mentor in your life, and I have many. I mean, a lot of the people that I bring on this program are actually the mentors in my life, because I'll ask them my questions and they'll say just these amazing, profound answers, like Pastor Jack Hibbs, who I just love. You know, I'll text him and be like, let's talk about this. And, you know, call me and we'll talk about it. And they'll say, yeah, we have to talk about this on air because everybody else needs to hear this too. And so, you know, and I ask him, am I thinking about this rightly? And how do I deal with these things, not just in policy, but in my personal life? You know, I have my pastors here in Florida who know me personally and who invest in my life. You know, my parents, I've many spiritual mentors who all of them I respect. I know that they are further along in their spiritual life and development than I am. And so I look to them hoping that I can be like them in their pursuit of Christ. And I have those mentors who know me, and I confess, you know, openly my sin with them and pray, you know, as I do to the Lord, because we are supposed to confess to one another and be accountable. But then I also take very seriously discipling those who are less spiritually advanced, or, you know, less understanding, or come into the truth of the knowledge of Christ as I am. And I then take that very seriously, not to just receive mentorship, but to be able to disciple and mentor other, not just young people, but even, you know, people older than I am, but they're younger in the faith. And there are a few people who they know that at any time they can reach me. I meet with them in person. You know, there's some here in Florida, but also elsewhere, to say, you know, this matters, that I encourage you in your faith. We talk about how to think through things rightly, truthfully, biblically. And we've got to make sure that we aren't just recipients of having a mentor. That's important. But we also disciple those who are younger in the faith. That is my encouragement to you as we remember Charlie Kirk, remember first Christ, but always be engaged in discipleship. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.